0800 303 7093, and you can tweet us at PowerFM 987. And so we continue with our Power Boardroom conversation for today. And of course, to unpack the conversation around the critical skills list that was, of course, released, we are joined on the line by Ann Bernstein. And she's coming, of course, as the executive director of the Center for Development and Enterprise. And of course, we're joined also by Mamokete Lijane, who's coming from APSA Corporate and Investment Banking. Good evening.
Thanks, Afisa, and Mamokete, and your listeners.
Good evening, Mamokete.
Good evening, Anne, and the listeners as well.
100%. And so, Anne, we're just going to kick off with, I guess, your some of the things you've shared with the market is that following the new critical skills list that has been released, I'm going to, I guess, quote you. You said, nearly 5 years after the white paper on immigration policy acknowledged that the economy is desperately short of skills, the new critical skills list does little to address the problem. If anything, it is more likely to be a vehicle for reducing skilled migration than expanding it, since it incorporates a major policy change affected by the same by the Home Affairs Minister in what looks to us as something of abuse of his authority. Can you help us understand that a little bit more, Anne?
Sure. Let's start at the beginning. So when President Ramaphosa talked of economic reform, he came up with a list of reforms he wanted to implement. And one of them was the whole issue of skilled migration and the critical skills list, essentially opening up South Africa to more critical skills. Now, we don't think the way to do this is through a list. South Africa is a country that is desperately short of skills. Not only are we losing skilled people, but we don't train enough people, and our economy, even at a very low growth rate or stagnant economy, is still short of skilled people with experience and qualifications and know-how. Now, the critical skills list is the government's way of dealing with this, which in our view is completely the wrong approach. We're desperately short of skills. I think we should turn it around. We should say, what kind of skilled people do we not want in South Africa? Mm-hmm. Much shorter list. Instead, we've gone for an approach where we think we can scientifically determine what kind of skilled people, qualifications, at what level the economy needs. But dynamic modern economies don't work this way. I'm sure you know lots of people who are doing jobs they never thought of and whose degrees are very different or qualifications are very different from where they've ended up. So this whole approach is crazy. The bottom line, though, is two things have happened. We now have a new critical skills list, which has been sort of horse-traded at NEDLAC as to what skills are in and which ones aren't. It's shorter than the one we got last year, and shorter than the one we had a few years before that. Mm. But the Minister of... which Minister?
Labour and Employment.
Minister of Labour and Employment introduced a new directive, which is that instead of the policy we've had since 2011, where anyone on the critical skills list could come into the country, if admitted, could come in and look for a job for 12 months, now you can only come into the country if you have a firm offer of employment. So we've closed the door even more than this list. So that's the bottom line of what we're saying. This is a move backwards. It doesn't help growth. It will inhibit growth. And it doesn't do what we understood, both the Minister of Finance and the President wanted from this economic reform.
Sure, and I'm going to pick up that point, but I quickly want to lean in on the point that Mamokete made in her response to your paper as well, is that stopping the regional movement of low-skilled labor into SA is therefore akin to stopping water from flowing. The authorities might pretend that they're doing something to appease the polity. However, this will only criminalize low-skilled immigrant with predictably devastating humanitarian consequences. Poor Basotho will continue to swim the Muhukare. Zimbabweans will brave crocodiles into the Limpopo River. Mama Gete?
Yes.
So simply, I mean, from what I'm hearing from you is that on the one side, the position you've taken or you hold is that limiting lowly skilled labor migration doesn't do anything for anything besides political appeasement.
Yeah, that is my opinion. So if you look internationally and you look globally, you have both push and pull factors for why people choose to leave countries and move to other countries. And for instance, if people are at war, if people have got great economic hardship, like in Zimbabwe, where access to food is a problem, then they've got those push factors, right? So, you know, you could put some legal barriers to those people moving, but legal barriers become very permeable. And borders, we know in South Africa, are very permeable. I myself am from Lesotho, and the border is extremely porous. And so because there's very little enforcement, but even if you had to have enforcement, people were swimming across the river, and people were dying in the river, for instance, during COVID. So people who are poor, who are desperate, will continue to move. And you have this this situation where government is permanently trying to put people in these holding cells, and they repatriate them back to their original countries. And people don't even bother to move at home. They literally turn back at the border and they cross again. So that to me is it's a losing battle, essentially.
Sure. I mean, if in essence, just to lean on that point, if the borders weren't porous. And I mean, we've also seen other countries do this in terms of being very specific that if people have got a particular labor profile, that they've got job reservations for locals. So simply, are you suggesting that if irrespective of whether or not we had good border control, this would have been a bad move, irrespective of whether or not in some countries it has worked?
And I think, I mean, if you think about the South African border and you think about the South African neighborhood, and you think about, for instance, the example of the U.S. with Mexico, they have exactly the same kind of problem, right, where the push and pull factors are such that, you know, you build a whole wall and it doesn't really necessarily stop people from crossing the border. So you could very well have a situation where you have some sort of formalized job reservation, et cetera, in certain industries, in certain activities. But we know that a lot of activity is informal as well.
Yeah.
So outside that formalized employment, people will still be able to eke out a living in informal ways. So they will continue to come for that. So for me, I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a very difficult thing to get by.
100%.
Sophisa, can I come in here?
Yes, please, Anne.
So Mama Katie and I agree on many things, but I have a slightly different view on how a country should manage its migration policy.
Sure.
I think you need to distinguish between skilled people and unskilled people. And we can debate where you draw that line, and I would draw it much lower than most people would. I am passionately in favor of migrants and immigration. I think they're the get-up-and-go people from their societies who move to another place, and they can make enormous contributions to their new home. So I am in favor of migration. But I think South Africa does have to learn from other countries about unskilled migration. And I think one does. I am in favor of borders. I am in favor of South Africa having much more effective borders. They will always be porous, but at the moment we hardly seem to have borders at all. So take a country like England. You know, it's an island, and they still struggle to control their borders perfectly, but they do control them to some extent. And America controls it to some extent. It is the richest country in the world. They don't have a wall. I mean, President Trump said he was going to build one, but they didn't complete it or anything like that. And actually, the numbers of migrants has not gone up considerably.
Yeah.
So I think migration is a very difficult issue for any country to deal with. And yes, we have to be realistic that borders
can be porous, but I do want borders and I do want rules. And I think the South African population needs to know that the government controls the borders,
yeah.
Not perfectly, but not the way we've been doing up till now. Ironically, we're in this very bad situation where people can walk across our borders and they are brave and they swim across rivers and I have enormous respect for them, but often they are mainly unskilled people without qualifications. And yet we simultaneously make it incredibly hard for skilled people to come into the country, when what South Africa wants is to be as open as possible to the skills that we desperately need, from doctors to teachers to maths teachers to engineers.
Are we not looking at then the kind of the border control as a red herring to kind of employment policy? One is a Home Affairs issue, I would think, and one is a Department of Employment and Labour. In terms of one, when you're talking about us making it difficult for skilled labour migration, I think that's an, it is labour and employment issue, but border control is a Home Affairs issue.
Well, actually, it's four departments that deal with, if you want to come into South Africa and you're a skilled migrant, I've been told by the most senior authority that you have to be okayed by four different departments, by Home Affairs, Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, Department of Higher Education, and Department of Labor and Employment. This is crazy.
But I also think, I mean, the point I try to make, and I don't think we disagree, you and I, at all. So the point I make is that the country is failing, for whatever reason, at preventing unskilled immigrants.
Agreed.
But what they then doing is, adopting a harsher approach to skilled immigrants. And,
yeah.
And skilled immigrants won't come because they have options.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the global labor markets, labor markets are super tight everywhere. So if you're preventing somebody who's coming in with skills from coming into South Africa, those people have got options. So those people are not going to be crossing at rivers, etc. They have more options.
Yeah.
So basically, on a net basis, what you end up with is getting quite a few immigrants of the unskilled kind that you possibly don't want, but you're preventing the skilled immigrants from coming.
Mm. Exactly.
And at the same time, South Africa is losing skills because there is a big immigration push out of South Africa. And I mean, the report that I quoted in my article, basically, they said South Africa is one of the biggest exporter of skills into the OECD countries.
Sure.
So you have this kind of twisted, perverse sort of outcome where you're bleeding skills, but you're preventing skills from coming in, but you're failing to prevent unskilled labor from coming in.
Sure, and I mean,
just
on that as well, and I mean, I think there's also a counterfactual to that, because there are lots of skilled people who are coming back to the country as well, where we looked at between years 2008 and 2013, we had close to 400,000 people coming back into the country. And so even when we have the brain drain conversation, what are the opportunities for having that as a balanced conversation?
Well, the way Mama Katie's put it, we absolutely agree. It's what we do about borders is the only issue, but we agree. So let's put that issue to bed.
Yeah.
What South Africa has done, even after 2011, when we tried to open up this door a little wider, they sort of think, as Mama Katie says, that skilled people will just rush to come to South Africa. We've got to go out. Countries like Australia and Canada and others, they go out around the world marketing their country. Come and help us. We should be doing two things. We have to change the attitudes of officials in our embassies and in our departments that are relevant to skilled migrants to get them accepting that we desperately need these foreign skills to help South Africa grow and to train South Africans. That's the first thing. And secondly, we should be going out into the world, like India and elsewhere, and saying, please come and help us. We want you to come to South Africa. We could get math teachers who talk good English from India. There are agencies that will help us do it. We have a desperate shortage. But we don't do this. So we've got to go out and be more active in attracting people, because it is a global war for talent.
But when we've gone out, maybe starting with the investment conversation, say we want to attract investments, and then multinationals come in South Africa, and then you do a labor audit on them, and you find a Huawei with close to 90% non-compliance, and 90% of their labor not being of South African descent as per the agreement of the deal itself, doesn't that then also just continue to make this conversation around foreign participation in our economy from a labor point of view and an investment point of view complex?
But is the question more, is are we talking policing here? Because if you have an agreement and a company has agreed to do XYZ and employ X number of South Africans, and they're flouting that agreement, that's a policing issue.
Yeah.
Why must that then color the whole labor and immigration conversation?
Sure.
It doesn't change the fact.
Yeah.
The fact that one company is non-compliant does not change the fact that you need skilled labor.
But it impacts the attitudes from an official's point of view, which is the point that Anne was making, right?
Well, not really. The country, parliament, the presidency, the country needs to be clear that we desperately need skilled immigrants, and that position needs to be communicated. We then need companies to obey the law. I agree with Mama Katie entirely. They're two different issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, we cannot grow this economy with the skills that we have. Now, in part, this is the fault that we haven't for the last 40 years built a skilled workforce. Mm. And even since democracy, we have not made progress in training and educating South Africans so that they can be more skilled for the workforce that we need.
Sure.
That must happen. But we don't have the lecturers at universities or the math teachers, and I'm sure others, that we need in order to train South Africans. So we have to change policy and attitudes to understand the economic reality that we will not grow this economy without lots more skilled people.
Mama Katie, is there something we can learn from the East African community, right? Because if you migrating within the community itself, I mean, I think seven economies, they've pretty much made labor migration borderless from a qualifications point of view, from many aspects. And in essence, I think they even created a kind of an e-visa for everyone in the community. Is that maybe one of the things that we could draw inspiration from?
I mean, I think the free as possible movement of labor, especially skilled labor within a regional context, has shown to be a very effective way of, amongst others, I mean, it has to be part of a set of measures of increasing productivity within a region. I mean, you see it in the Eurozone, for instance. And that's why there was so much pushback against Brexit. So, you know, more integration, and I think that's part of the African Free Trade Agreement, a sub-part of it, is around this idea that you need to get freer movement of people within the region, and in that instance then you will get better allocation of resource of labor resources within the region, and therefore you will enhance productivity. That is this dynamism, right? And I think we need to understand, and we need to decide, and I mean, I know it's a difficult thing to get our heads around, whether we want a planned economy or we want a dynamic economy. So over time, economic dynamism is always going to be a better allocator of resources. You're always going to end up in a better place than where you started. But it does mean there's going to be losers in that system, and we need to think about how we deal with that.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that with outside of that regional migration, if you're just looking at skilled labor in South Africa, it's not clear that there would even be domestic losers if you allowed more skilled labor in.
Cool.
In fact, for each skilled person, you get a multiplier effect as far as jobs are concerned. So those people would actually increase employment, and they're not displacing any South Africans because there aren't any South Africans. They're two different things. But I think over time, I'm with Anne, I prefer a more free movement of labor, capital, etc., at least within the region. I think that would be a very good thing if we could get it
right. We'll take a quick caller and we'll hear what he's got to ask, and then I'll come back to you. And Aubrey from Rodeport, good evening.
Evening, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Just a comment.
Yes, sir.
You see, I agree with the issue around, you know, the attraction of skilled labor. But South Africa, where we are, we're playing the Father Christmas of the world when there's no Christmas for this country. So the point is, we can talk about the East Africa community, but if you look at Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, those countries, they've got rule of law. They've got the police that are doing their work. In South Africa, we've got the police, law enforcement agencies with the budget, but no will to do anything. They're doing no policing. There's absolutely nothing that the government is doing. So we need to compare apple to apple. We are not in a state where we can police anything. We can see our country basically is becoming a failed state. We can argue about that. Right now, the issue of Canada and other countries, we have medical doctors. We have less under 35,000 doctors in this country treating a population of 60 million.
But Anne and Mamokete don't disagree with you. They said that we can bet that point, that where there's a poor border control, we must address that. Where there's poor policing, we must address that. But that doesn't solve the issue of how do we crowd in skilled migration into the country.
Yeah, I hear you. The point I was just making is just a comment to say, are we capable? Do we have a state that is capable of dealing with those issues?
No, thank you, Aubrey. And we'll take one more caller. Tabo?
Hey, hi, guys. You know, on the issue of skilled and unskilled, you know, daughter was struggling with math, and then there has been some say that we are short of math teachers. But I found it too. My daughter now, she's getting about 90% in math. And then let's speak of ESCO. There were skilled workers that were acquired outside the country, but we still have loads of shady. And then billions and billions of rent are being paid to these companies. For what?
So, okay, thank you, Tabo. And I guess, again, just to the point that you're making is, does one bad apple make all the bad apples? But I'll ask you to answer that. But one of the things Mamokete asked, and I was quite curious about it, is that do we want a planned economy or a dynamic economy? And the earlier point you made, Anne, was that we need to come out with a view of the skilled migration we don't want. And that sounds more like a planned economy. Is that the position you have?
Not at all. I don't want a planned economy, but I do think a country needs a migration policy. Mm. And I think there is a big difference between having skills and unskilled people. I want to add one more point to Mamokete's argument, which I agree with 100%. If we were to bring in more skilled people to South Africa, we would also help to reduce the wage gap between highly skilled people in this country and lesser skilled people. The unions keep complaining about this, and we are high internationally. Because we have a shortage of skilled people, we have to pay them more. Yeah. If you brought in lots more people, we would help to reduce that. So I think the benefits of skilled migration are enormous. They will start new companies, they will train South Africans, they will help run our institutions and build up knowledge in our society, which will help. There is no downside to skilled immigration. The only possible downside is that the small elites, the people run.
I think we've lost Anne a little bit. And in any case, Power Listener, she was wrapping up a very interesting conversation. And that was Anne Bernstein, who's the Executive Director of the Center for Development and Enterprise. And thank you, Mamokete, as well. And Mamokete is coming from APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, really giving us insights around one, rethinking our border management challenges, particularly in how it drives out or it crowds out the kind of skills that we do do need for an econ- from an economic point of view, and also saying that we must learn from some of the other countries in terms of some of the things they've tried and they haven't worked, and the things, of course, that can ensure that we've got the right kind of balance in terms of skilled, semi-skilled, and largely unskilled as well in the base of our economy. And that, Power Listener, brings that show to the end for today. And as always, ikamalam dungosifiso sikhenjana usibalkulu sochenge ustweka madonela umabonela empunzini ugaduza sathi gadu gadu gadu.
Power Business was proudly brought